Hello, good afternoon, everyone. I am very pleased to welcome you this afternoon to the Senate Labor Committee and our first meeting together. I'm State Senator Jen McEwen. I will be chairing the Senate Labor Committee, and I am just thrilled to be in this role, and I really look forward to our work together over this session. I represent Duluth in the Minnesota State Senate, and this is my second term serving as an elected official and a state senator. And what I'd like to do, we're on somewhat of a tight schedule today because we have a lot of presentations. What I'd like to do today is to review our jurisdiction, make sure that we're all on the same page learning about this committee and our role here at the Senate. So this is a good learning day for us. We'll have a series of presentations. Everyone should have received an agenda in your folder so you can follow along. What I'd like to do first is go through our committee members and have everybody introduce themselves. If you'd please say your name and also tell us who you represent and how long you've been here in the Senate. And if it just a couple quick words about yourself would be great. And perhaps perhaps we'll start with our vice chair of the committee, Senator Grant Housechild.
Thank you, Chair McEwen. I'm Grant Housechild. I have the privilege of representing both, and some of you have already heard this, the largest and the most beautiful district in Minnesota, District 3. It represents the North Shore, the Boundary Waters, two tribal nations, the Iron Range, and countless communities across the Northland. So thrilled to be here on the Labor Committee. Means a lot to me, labor does, and so I look forward to the work we're gonna do ahead. Thank you.
Then if we can just proceed on down this way, Senator Marty, if you would go ahead and go next, and then we'll go to the other side.
John Marty, glad to be on the Labor Committee, and represent parts of Ramsey County, south, north of St. Paul, between Roseville and
Senator Rob Kupek. I am from Senate District 4, which is most of Clay in the western part of Becker County, out on the western edge of Minnesota, which maybe in the wintertime nobody has ever described as the most beautiful part of Minnesota. But it is beautiful at other times of the year. But happy to be here. Been here, it'll be a week now. So there you go.
I'm Senator Nathan Wiesenberg. I'm from Central Minnesota, District 10. That's between St. Cloud and Brainerd. It's about a seven county area, not full counties, all of them. Lots of farming in that area. So glad to be here.
Hi, I'm Senator Bill Liske. I am the senator for Senate District 58. It represents many different communities and small towns around the areas of New Prague, Northfield, Farmington, and the surrounding, like I said, surrounding communities. So those are the big areas that I represent. Been here for about a week, so look forward to working hard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Gene Dornick. Serve District 23, Freeborn, Faribault, Maurer, Wauseko, and Steele County. Bigger towns are Austin and Albert Lee. I grew up on a farm. Labor is very important to me. I was a local union member for 22 years. I'm a carpenter by trade, and just look forward to serving here in the Labor Committee. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Senator Glenn Grunhagen. I was served six terms in the House and fortunate enough to step into the Senate here. Look forward to working. I represent McLeod Sibley, a little piece of Meeker, and Wright County, which is in southwest Minnesota. And I look forward to working on the Labor Committee. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Claire Umu-Verbaten. I represent District 66 in the Minnesota Senate. That includes St. Paul, Roseville, Falcon Heights, and Lauderdale. I come from a union family, so very excited to be on the Labor Committee and just do work to support working people. And this is my second week.
Welcome, everyone. Again, very excited to be working with all of you this session on some, hopefully some very important legislation that we're going to move forward in support of working people of Minnesota. Oh, and Yep, we have one more member here coming in, but why don't we give her a break here? We'll I'll pass it to our committee administrator, Fabian Bean, and then we can work across the line with our professional staff that will be aiding our committee.
Hello, everyone. I'm Fabian Bean. I'll be the committee administrator for the Labor Committee. It's my honor to be here in this role, and I look forward to working with all of you.
My name is Jack Fisher. I am Senator McEwen's committee legislative assistant. This is my first legislative session, and I'm excited to be here.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Carlin Doyle Fontaine. I am Senate counsel to the Labor Committee, and I've staffed this committee for probably over 10 years. So if you have any questions or need anything drafted, I would be your person. Thanks so much. Look forward to working with you.
Hello, Madam Chair, members of this committee. My name is Eric Olson, and I'm the fiscal analyst for the Labor Committee. If you need to request fiscal notes or ask about where the budget currently is, you'll come to me. This is my first time on the Labor Committee. I was a committee page back in 2018 and 2019, so happy to be back at the Minnesota Senate. Thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Pappas, would you also take a moment to introduce yourself? Thanks.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and I apologize for being late. It's a bad habit. I'm Senator Sandy Pappas from St. Paul, and you all are actually sitting in my legislative district. So welcome.
All right. Thank you. And if we could also have the partisan research and the people who are sitting in the back there that help all of us learn about the legislation that's coming before the committee and help us in so many ways. If you could also come out and also our pages and come out and introduce yourselves, that would be great as well. Thank you.
My name is John Beshe. I'm GOP research for the Labor Committee. This is my eighth session, and I've covered labor issues for the last 4 years or so.
My name is Danny Gillis. I'm the DFL researcher for the committee. This is my fourth legislative session. Most recently, I was with Senator Jason Isaacson, who served on this committee the last biennium.
My name is Sam Shackman. This is my third legislative session, and I am a committee page for the Labor Committee.
My name is Andrew George. I'm a committee page. This is my first legislative session, and I'm excited to be here.
My name is Joseph Rusciano. It's my first legislative session. I am Senator Kupek's intern. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Thank you, everyone, for the introductions. Today, as I noted at the beginning, we're going to hear from a number of people to tell us about our jurisdiction and the sort of purview that our committee focuses in on. And to start, what we'd like to do is hear from our Senate counsel and research and fiscal analysis and have a walkthrough of the jurisdiction. And I'll just say, I've mentioned this to a couple of people, but perhaps not everyone. I'm going to respectfully ask of all of the people speaking today, if you would be so kind as to refrain from using acronyms, at least as we get started. Please say the whole words of what you're meaning. This is just so important. We have new members, and also for some of us who've been here for a little while, we have so many acronyms floating around in this place. And so just so to make sure that everybody can be understood and we're all on the same page to really understand what people are saying, that would be really helpful. All right, thank you very much, and I will pass it to Carlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I think you should have in your packet what looks like a jurisdiction list for labor, or not. Okay. Do you have in your packet a spreadsheet for the... Okay. Okay. I have a copy of this. In any event, before we get the copy, I will just say that the jurisdiction list is something that the Office of Senate Counsel puts together. It basically is a tool to help our office and everyone else find out what the proper committee would be to address bills and to be the committee of origination for bills and also for drafting purposes. If something comes in and it's sort of an obscure topic, you might refer to this list to find the proper counsel. This list is currently in draft form, and when it is finally issued from our office in its full and final form, it will be available on the Senate website. It's somewhat buried, but it is there. So it should be sent out soon, and it would be sent Senate-wide once it is finalized. So what we're going to be looking at today is in draft form. That would be fine. I can go over that. Sure. Well, Madam Chair, if it's just going to be a few minutes, I think I could probably talk. There are two main state agencies that are under the jurisdiction of this committee, and that would be the Department of Labor and Industry. And it is going to be super hard for me to stay away from acronyms because that is what I do. That's how I refer to that department all the time, and I'm not going to say the name. But the Department of Labor and Industry, and then also the other main state agency is the Bureau of Mediation Services. Within Department of Labor and Industry, there are a number of offices or councils and boards that do some work. So that is under the label of other agencies. I will just read off the list of that. So there's the Access Review Board, and they would consider waivers from the accessibility requirements that the state has. There's also an Apprenticeship Advisory Board, a Board of Electricity, High Pressure Piping Systems Board. Then there's an Interstate Industrialized Modular Buildings Commission. Modular buildings, manufactured housing is also under the purview of this committee. There is the Occupational Safety and Health Review Board. They would look at appeals from OSHA decisions that maybe come from the ALJ. And then there's also the Plumbing Board. Then there are some related groups also under, this is a council that is kind of underneath the purview of the Department of Labor and Industry is the Combative Sports Advisory Council. There's the Occupational Safety and Health Advisory Council. And this is a council that is 12 members appointed by the commissioner, and they advise the department on occupational safety and health matters. There's also it's officially called in the statute Council on Workers' Compensation. However, this is commonly known as the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, and this is the council that reviews in statute. They are created in statute, and they review and recommend legislation or changes to workers' compensation law. And so they will come forward with a bill if there are any changes, any technical changes, and it will be fully vetted by labor, business, all sorts of people that are involved in the workers' compensation subject area. And then there's also the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. Everyone should have the copy now that hopefully we're all looking off of the copy. Great. Then we come to the section on confirmations, and this would be, confirmations means that it is in the statute and it says that these positions must have the consent of the Senate. So there would be other boards where it doesn't say that, so the Senate cannot say yay or nay on these individuals. Under these confirmations then that are subject to the Senate for this committee, we have the Commissioner of Labor and Industry, the Commissioner of Mediation Services, the board members of the High Pressure Piping Systems, the board members of the Plumbing Board, and then the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. And finally, for the budget jurisdiction, which Mr. Olson will go over, we have the Department of Labor and Industry, the Bureau of Mediation Services, the Public Employment Relations Board. There is an acronym behind it. I will say PERB just because it's on the list. And then the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. Under a catch-all, under other issues, such some of the more random subjects would be amusement rides. Construction codes is something that is discussed quite often in this committee. Elevators, employment leaves, minimum wage, pipe fitters, For example, the sick and safe time bill will come to this committee, as well as the paid family leave bill will be coming to this committee. I know we'll have more from the presenters that will be coming up, so I will not steal their thunder and let them explain their own agencies and boards. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Fontaine. Do any of the members have any questions for Ms. Fontaine about these jurisdictional pieces? And again, we apologize that we're just getting you this list now, but please go ahead and keep that list and you can refer to it in terms of jurisdiction. Are there any questions? Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Fontaine. Thanks for your flexibility. And then if we could hear from Mr. Olson, our fiscal analyst.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of this committee. Again, you should have just received the spreadsheet with tracking information based on the November 2022 forecast. Just as a reminder, all of the information on the spreadsheet is in the thousands of dollars. And as Ms. Fontaine just said, currently the budget jurisdiction for this committee includes the Department of Labor and Industry, the Bureau of Mediation Services, the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, and the Public Employees Relations Board. So just starting with the Department of Labor and Industry, they appropriate resources from a variety of funds that include the General Fund, the Workers' Compensation Fund, the Construction Code Fund, the Special Revenue Fund, the Workforce Development Fund, and the Federal Fund. Based on the November 22 forecast, the General Fund expenditures for the Department of Labor and Industry for the 2022 and 2023 biennium is $22,487,000, with the total all funds amount of expenditures for the 2022 and 2023 biennium of $216,233,000. Now, moving to the right, looking at the 2024 and 2025 base, we see that the general fund's base appropriation for the Department of Labor and Industry is $6,958,000. The difference in the general fund from the prior biennium primarily comes from the department no longer having administration costs for frontline worker aid. The sum of the all funds base for the Department of Labor and Industry for the 2024 and 25 biennium is $204,695,000. So now moving on to the Bureau of Mediation Services. They have expenditures of $4,782,000 for the 22 and 23 biennium from the general fund, and their base appropriations for the 24 and 25 biennium is $4,580,000. And then moving right along to the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. The Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals expenditures were $4,566,000 for 2022 and 2023, and then looking at the 2024 and 2025 base, it's $4,566,000 for the agencies in our budget. Jurisdiction, the total all funds expenditures for the 22 and 23 biennium is $225,581,000, and the total all funds base for the 2024 and 2025 biennium is $213,538,000. And the general fund total expenditures for the 22 and 23 biennium is $27,269,000. And it is $11,538,000 for the 24 and 25 biennium. Madam Chair, this concludes my presentation. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Yes, Senator.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, a couple questions. Is there, I see some negative, I think these brackets are negative, right? In the, on the far right column.
Adam, yes.
Yes, sorry.
Is that actual savings then?
Thank you, Senator. Go ahead, Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Senator, those are just decreases in the appropriations.
Okay, so Madam Chair, just a follow-up question. So they're decreases, so the overall cost was reduced for these programs?
Thank you, Senator, for the question. If, please go ahead and feel free to answer openly, Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Senator. Basically, a different amount of funds have been, a less amount of funds have been appropriated to various programs. So if we look at the overall general fund, $15,500,000 in the far right column, that's like the frontline worker aid program that I was discussing before. That was one time money. So that's why it's that much smaller compared to the prior biennium.
And that, Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator, go ahead.
Just another follow-up question is, so in other words, these are decreases in expenditure under the bracketed items, correct?
It's comparing appropriations to current expenditures. So Mr. Senator, it's basic decreases in expenditures, and correct. So we're appropriating less than what we expended in the current biennium.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Senator Gruenhagen, do you have any follow-up?
Yeah, I'll take it offline, though, afterwards. I'll corner him and talk to him.
Very good, Senator. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Olson at this point? And yes, of course, we could always be in contact with Mr. Olson with more detailed questions as we go forward as well. All right. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Olson, and thank you, Ms. Fontaine, for the presentation on jurisdiction and our fiscal situation. And next, we will move on to a Department of Labor and Industry overview, and we're delighted to have Commissioner Nicole Blissenbach here to present on the department. Welcome, Commissioner.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair McEwen and committee members for inviting me to present the overview of the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. I am happy to be here and looking forward to departing all of the knowledge about the Department of Labor and Industry. So, and Josiah is going to be handling my slides, so you can move to the next slide. So I'll start by just giving a brief kind of 10,000-foot level overview of the agency operating areas. As a reminder, DLI's mission is to ensure Minnesota's work and living environments are equitable, healthy, and safe. The agency has a number of business units, and those are bullet-pointed on the screen. So our workers' compensation division ensures appropriate benefits are delivered to injured workers efficiently and at a reasonable cost. The division strives to create an environment where injured workers promptly receive benefits and services and where the system operates efficiently and cost-effectively. Minnesota OSHA, and I will say Occupational Safety and Health, so I'm not using an acronym, helps keep Minnesota workplaces safe and healthy through two different areas, the separate compliance, which is the workplace inspection and investigation, and consultation, which is free voluntary workplace safety and health services. So those two separate units make up Minnesota OSHA. Next, we have our labor standards division, which protects workers and promotes compliance through education and enforcement of wage and hour laws, child labor, prevailing wage, and other employment laws. Apprenticeship Minnesota promotes and facilitates the development of quality registered apprenticeship programs that help employers recruit, train, and retain highly skilled and diverse workforce in Minnesota. It conducts compliance to ensure that the protection and advancement of apprentices training in those apprenticeship programs. Next, we have construction codes and licensing, which I may slip and call CCLD. The CCLD unit protects public health and safety through the enforcement of reasonable and uniform construction standards, focused on improving efficiencies in the delivery, inspection, permitting, licensing, and other construction regulatory services to industry stakeholders. dual training pipeline program supports employers in building their own dual training programs, strategically combining related instruction with on-the-job training to ensure a skilled workforce. This program targets four high-growth industry sectors, including advanced manufacturing, agriculture, healthcare services, and information technology. The next program I'll mention is our Youth Skills Training Program. And this program supports the development of partnerships between education and employers to provide students 16 and older with classroom instruction, safety training, and paid work experience in high-growth, high-demand occupations. This program provides grant money that's available for partnerships to create and implement youth skills training programs throughout the state. These locally developed programs are approved, supported, and monitored by the Department of Labor and Industry. Next is the Office of Combative Sports, and this office ensures Minnesota's combative sporting events are conducted in a manner that minimizes injuries and ensures fair competition. And then finally is our General Support Unit. The General Support Unit performs functions for the agency, including communications, financial services, human resources, our Office of General Counsel, projects and planning, public engagement, and research and statistics. Next slide. So I won't go through this, but this is a current organizational chart of the Department of Labor and Industry that identifies each of the business units as well as the division managers over each of those units. All right, so just quickly touching on the source of our funds. I know that the purpose of this is an agency overview, but it's important to also give an overview of the budget to understand the various funding sources for our agency. So what this chart shows is the source of appropriations to the Department of Labor and Industry by fund. The Workers' Compensation Fund is the largest source of funding for the agency. The Workers' Compensation Fund is made up of assessment on insurers and self-insurers active in Minnesota. The Construction Codes Fund is revenue, another large area source of funds for the agency, and that's revenue from licenses, permits, inspections, and other work performed by the agency. And then as you'll notice in this pie chart, the general fund is a small fraction of the overall revenue funding to the agency. We also receive federal funds, as well as some funds out of the Workforce Development Fund and Contractor Recovery Fund. Next slide. As is already mentioned, Labor and Industry's base budget for fiscal year 24-25 is $217.35 million. Of the approximately $217 million base budget, $26.72 million is general fund, and that goes to fund our labor standards, IT modernization, of which that ends in fiscal year 23. The majority of funding, as I mentioned, does come from the Workers' Compensation Fund and Construction Code Fund. All right, now I'm going to jump into each of our business units to just give a little bit of an overview. Each of the slides will reflect how many FTEs we have working in each of the units, as well as what the operating budget for that unit is. So workers' compensation, as I mentioned, this division helps employees who have been injured on the job to receive proper medical treatment and benefits. In a timely manner, it helps mediate disputes about injuries and benefits, and it issues penalties for late benefit payments to injured employees and reviews records to ensure that state laws are followed. The Workers' Compensation Division is made up of six different areas. The Alternative Dispute Resolution Unit seeks early intervention in workers' compensation disputes through administrative conferences and mediations. They also handle calls from the Workers' Compensation Help Desk and respond to questions from injured workers, employers, healthcare providers, attorneys, and qualified rehabilitation consultants. The Business Technology Office is responsible for managing business needs, policies, and priorities related to the use and ongoing support of key technology systems, including the WorkComp campus system. It consolidates key business and technology support functions into a single work unit within the Workers' Compensation Division. Next, we have our Compliance Records and Training Unit, and this unit maintains worker compensation files. Claims, records, and training ensures compliance with the benefit provisions of the workers' compensation law by auditing workers' compensation claims, penalizing insurers for late payment, and providing educational outreach. It also registers qualified rehabilitation consultants, or QRCs, and provides analysis of medical and rehabilitation issues. Upon request, Compliance Records and Training mails the state's required workplace posters out to employers without charge. That's a service our agency does in a number of areas. Next, we have the Office of the Work Comp Ombudsman, and the Ombudsman is a separate entity within the Department of Labor and Industry. Its purpose is to inform, assist, and empower injured workers and small businesses having difficulty navigating the workers' compensation system. And to help resolve problems that are encountered. So that is a great resource for both employers and businesses out there who have questions about the system. Next, we have the Special Compensation Fund. And the Special Compensation Fund administers the workers' compensation claims of injured workers who worked for employers that did not carry workers' compensation insurance or that declared bankruptcy. So the fund administers the uninsured, bankrupt, self-insured, and asbestos claims and claims related to the supplementary benefit and second injury reimbursement programs. It enforces the requirement that all state employees carry worker compensation insurance. Vocational rehabilitation, or often referred to as voc rehab, provides vocational rehabilitation services to help injured workers return to work. The staff consists of qualified rehabilitation consultants, or QRCs, placement specialists, and placement assistants. Injured workers eligible for services include those whose workers' compensation claims were denied, those whose rehabilitation services were suspended, those who qualify for services paid by insurance carriers or self-insured employers, and those who are awaiting a decision about eligibility for workers' compensation benefits. All right. We can jump on. I did add a slide this year to talk a little bit about one of the councils that was mentioned that falls under the purview of the Department of Labor and Industry, and that is the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. So this council is an important part in the workers' compensation system. They recommend legislation pertaining to workers' compensation and advise the department in carrying out the purposes of Chapter 176. So there are six representatives from business and six representatives from organized labor that make up the Work Comp Advisory Council. And we also have four legislative caucus members appointed by the majority and minority in both the House and the Senate. DLI provides administrative support, and the commissioner serves as the non-voting chair of the council. By law, the Work Comp Advisory Council approval requires a near consensus of members, the support of a majority of both the labor and business delegations. So that is in state statute. And really, due to decades of contention over work comp bills at the legislature, in 1995, legislators informally agreed that future work comp bills would need to be recommended by the Labor Business Work Comp Advisory Council before passage. So this council does play a very important role, and we normally have meetings the second Wednesday of even-numbered months, although we add quite a bit more during the legislative session. So please reach out if there's anything that needs to be brought in front of the council. All right, moving on to Minnesota OSHA compliance. So OSHA compliance enforces the Minnesota Occupational Safety and Health Act and standards that assure safe and healthful working conditions for Minnesotans. And this is our compliance unit. So they do that through helping employers comply with the regulations, conducting workplace inspections and investigations, and providing technical assistance, training, and outreach. they investigate, unfortunately, we have the role of investigating fatalities that occur on work sites throughout Minnesota. The average of fatalities investigated by our OSHA compliance unit is about 32 each year. We also investigate serious injuries, and we average about 56 serious injury investigations each year. Some of the by the numbers are up on the slide. We did in the last federal fiscal year, we did 1,367 compliance inspections, outreach and training to over 3,600 participants, and handled more than 7,000 incoming calls and emails. All right. Next, I'll move on to our OSHA Workplace Safety Consultation Unit. And this unit provides a wide variety of free services to employers, including on-site consultation, training, education, and outreach in general industry and in construction settings. Services are provided by safety and health experts who are highly qualified occupational safety and health professionals. It's the consultation arm of Minnesota OSHA. So its services are completely separate from Minnesota OSHA compliance. So no citations or fines are issued, provided that employers agree to correct any serious hazards that are identified during the consultation visits. Oh, this, I also should point out that the Workplace Safety Consultation also administers the Safety Grant Program. The Safety Grant Program assists employers in making their workplaces safer and healthier. It awards funds with dollar-for-dollar match up to $10,000 to qualifying employers for projects designed to reduce the risk of injury or an illness to their employees. Moving on to construction codes and licensing. The Construction Codes and Licensing Division develops and enforces construction-related health and safety codes for the construction of buildings. The division also licenses boiler operators, electricians, electrical and technology systems contractors, elevator constructors, high-pressure piping pipe fitters, manufactured home installers, plumbers, plumbing contractors, power limited technicians, residential building contractors, remodelers, and roofers. The division also certifies building officials. The division also works to protect the public through education, inspection, plan review, licensing, enforcement, and runs the Contractor Recovery Fund, which helps make homeowners whole when they are defrauded by licensed building contractors. So just some numbers up there, more than 140,000 personal and business licenses and registrations were done through our Construction Codes and Licensing Division, and 132,850 construction permits, and 96% of which were done online. All right. Next, we'll move to the Office of Combative Sports, and the goal of the Office of Combative Sports is to ensure that Minnesota's combative sporting events are conducted in a manner that minimizes injuries and ensures fair competition. So we regulate professional boxing and professional and amateur mixed martial arts. We license combatants, corners, officials, promoters, and ringside physicians. In 2022, we regulated 16 events. We have 302 licensed professional and amateur mixed martial arts and boxing combatants, 405 licensed corners, 67 licensed officials, and 11 licensed promoters. Right. Moving to our Labor Standards Division, the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry has a division known as the Labor Standards and Apprenticeship Division. In labor standards, the goal is to protect workers and promote compliance through enforcement and outreach about wage and hour laws and other employment laws, including child labor, minimum wage, overtime, prevailing wage, the Women's Economic Security Act, which includes pregnancy accommodations, pregnancy and parental leave, sick and safe leave, as well as nursing mothers protections and wage disclosure protections. Independent contractor misclassification in the construction industry also falls under the labor standards purview. In the year, in the last year, we had 220,000 workers served and impacted by the services in the Labor Standards Division. And in the past 5 years, we've recovered almost $7 million in wages for employees that were unpaid. They also handle a large incoming call volume. Last year, we had almost 21,000 inquiries regarding wage and hour laws. Next, Apprenticeship Minnesota. It's the state's apprenticeship authority under the Minnesota Apprenticeship Act and is recognized by the U.S. Department of Labor Office of Apprenticeship. We promote and facilitate the development of quality registered apprenticeship programs that help employers recruit, train, and retain highly skilled and diverse workforce in Minnesota. We also conduct compliance reviews to ensure the protection and advancement of apprentices in the training programs. And we work to ensure opportunities through apprenticeship for underrepresented Minnesotans, including women, people of color, indigenous people, veterans, and people with disabilities. We have over 11,000 active apprentices training as of December 30th, 2022. 3,835 new apprenticeship registrations. And it's also great to point out that 22 of registered apprentices are people of color, 8% are women, and we're hoping to increase those numbers. All right, youth skills training, and I hit on this a little bit in my opening, but youth skills training is a program that supports the development of partnerships between schools and employers to provide students, these are 16 and 17-year-old students, with opportunity to experience paid work as well as related training. And these are in high demand, high growth occupations. We have grant money that's available to start youth skills training programs to create those programs throughout the state. Those programs are supported and monitored by our youth skills training program personnel at the Department of Labor and Industry. Dual training pipeline supports employers in building their own dual training programs that combine related instruction with on-the-job training to develop a skilled workforce. Targets four high-growth industries: advanced manufacturing, agriculture, healthcare services, and information technology, and really brings together leaders from industries to identify, define, and create occupational competencies for in-demand careers. So I think that brings me to the end of the presentation. I do have division staff along with me if there are technical questions that anybody has, but it was a pleasure being here, and I'm happy to answer any questions as I am able.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Blissenbach. We appreciate very much you coming to speak with us today and giving us this overview. I just have a quick question. We have a nice little summary handout that we've given to everyone. Could you perhaps also send us a copy of the slides that you just presented? Because there was so much more detail in those slides, and it'd be nice for people to have that if they want to go back and review a certain program or a certain division later on.
Absolutely.
Okay, great, thank you. And then we'll go ahead and forward that on to all of the members as well. Okay, and we do have some time for questions for the commissioner and for her staff if people have questions. So yes, Senator, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. And you were to my office. We had a nice little visit. Anyway, I appreciate your presentation. But you know, one of the things, as you know, we're lay people up here, right? To evaluate these programs. And one of the things when I was on the school board, when we had our annual audit, what would they do? They would divide their total cost by the number of students, whether it was transportation or whatever, and then they'd give us a little historical and statewide comparison, especially for districts of the same size. So as lay people, that helps us evaluate programs, and maybe there's reasons our costs are higher or lower than in a particular area. But, you know, serving on the school board, that was a nice manual to use to evaluate, you know, the different programs. And, you know, I appreciate the numbers served, but I would actually like to see those served by the budget of that agency so that we know what the per cost is per per person served. Do you follow me? Okay. So, and the other thing that would be nice in your spare time is do a five-state comparison so we can see the surrounding states, what their cost is for that particular agency. Do they have that agency? And how many people they serve divided by the cost of their agency. And as we have that comparison, we up here can make much more informed decisions about government. And, you know, I find government is lacking in those areas for whatever reason. But again, when I served on the school board, I found that to be very helpful in terms, and again, just because one cost is higher or lower than another state or whatever doesn't mean that it's wrong. It just means we need to understand the reasons why, and I think this committee can be more effective in terms of helping you in those areas with that type of information. Otherwise, it's just numbers, and it's just this is the way it is right now, and as lay people, that's hard for us to evaluate. Any comments, Commissioner?
Thank you, Senator Grünhagen. Commissioner, do you have any response to that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair McEwen and Senator Grünhagen. I will say that we work very hard at the department to develop metrics by which to look at the effectiveness of our programs. We have many different programs with, you know, with different stakeholders and different populations served. Many of our programs have a statewide reach. And it's important to us to make sure that we are delivering the services that we have at the department to the people that need them. And we do have metrics internally to ensure that we're doing that in an efficient manner. But I do hear what you're saying about the budget and the programming, and that is something that we do take into consideration when we're looking at what are the needs of our constituents, what are the needs of our stakeholders, and ensuring that we can deliver those services. One example I might give is our Construction Codes and Licensing Division just recently brought on a new IT modernization system to allow for online permitting. I highlighted that, that most permits are done online. It's been, just by every metric that we've set, a complete success. We're seeing people have permits turned around immediately as they apply online and are able to receive that permit. So I can just assure you, Senator Grünhagen, that we do have those metrics and we work hard to achieve efficiency within the department in all of our unit areas.
Thank you, Commissioners. Senator Grünhagen, did you have any follow-up?
Commissioner, I appreciate those assurances, but I represent, what, about 70,000 constituents, and it'd be nice to be able to give have information that I actually could show them how we compare to other states and what efficiency there is. And again, just numbers and slides, it's hard for lay people to actually evaluate that. And I'd like my constituents to be able to have input on the subject. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Or Madam.
Thank you, Senator Grünhagen. Senator Pappas.
Whoa. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for the overview. I just wanted you to reinforce my thoughts here is, so wage theft and labor trafficking, are those, I didn't see you mention that at all, so are those handled by the Attorney General's office?
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Commissioner?
Senator McEwen, thank you, and Senator Pappas. So wage theft is covered under our labor standards unit in our wage and hour enforcement. I probably use different words, but the wage theft law that was passed in 2019 did in fact give the department more authority as well as additional funding to enforce wage and hour laws under our purview. We have a great partnership with the Attorney General's office. They have the authority to enforce wage and hour laws in a slightly different manner, but also enforce wage and hour laws. I think I'll just say that the wage theft problem is a problem that is big enough to give more than enough work to the Attorney General's office, to the U.S. Department of Labor, who also enforces federal wage and hour laws. And now since the 2019 wage theft law, also providing a criminal ramification for wage theft that happens by employers as they're taking advantage of their workplace or of their workers. So that is under the department of the agency. I will also talk about just hit on the wage trafficking. The trafficking is criminal in nature. We often see that go hand in hand with wage theft. When employees are trafficked, they're usually not being paid the wages that they are owed. They're usually not working in an environment that is safe or following OSHA standards. Their employer is probably not carrying workers' compensation insurance for their workers. So trafficking is touches on all areas of the department. But we as a department do not enforce the criminal aspect of trafficking.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right, any further questions? Well, again, thank you very much, Commissioner, and thank you for bringing staff here as well to come and speak with us today and give us this overview. We all very much look forward to working with the department. And I might say as well, one of the things that I thought of as I was listening to your presentation is just how remarkably collaborative the department is in regard to trying to keep the peace between employers and labor and really moving people forward collaboratively as much as is possible. And the role that the department plays is just so instrumental. So thank you for giving us this overview.
Thank you, Chair McEwen and committee members. It was a pleasure to be here today.
Thank you. Okay, so next, moving on in our agenda, we have a presentation from the Bureau of Mediation Services. Welcome to the Labor Committee. And could you please introduce yourself to the committee by stating your name and title for the record? And yes, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Todd Donkavich. I am Deputy Commissioner at the Bureau of Mediation Services. Thank you for the opportunity to provide the agency overview this afternoon. The Bureau of Mediation Services, or BMS, we are the neutral, impartial agency that works primarily with public employers, employees, and their unions, helping them to resolve issues of representation, providing mediation services for both labor contract negotiations and grievance disputes. We travel the state to all of your districts and all counties to provide those services. Additionally, we're the smallest cabinet-level agency. We are currently at 13 FTEs. In your packet, you will find a BMS brochure that I'll walk through kind of first. It's the folded brochure with the BMS on the top. And then I think I'll end with the two-sided flyer that should also be in your packet. So the Bureau of Mediation Services, kind of our agency history, we were established in 1939, and as was pointed out earlier, that's Minnesota Statute 179. Over the years and the growth of the state's economy and increased complexity of contract negotiations, things have evolved. And in 1971, the extension of collective bargaining to the public sector in 179A took place. Most of our work is around the public sector employees in 179A. We do have a federal agency that we work closely with and that is a good partner for us that does a lot of the private sector work. Our mission is to promote stable and constructive labor management relations. We accomplish this through representation functions, mediation, and labor management programs that I will talk about a little bit more. Starting with representation, this is how employees and exclusive representatives come to us first when they would like to be represented in a unit by their employer. It's called an appropriate unit. They petition our services. We work with them to determine what that unit is. if based in statute. And if we're unable to do that, we will have a hearing, a public hearing where we hear testimony and we apply the statute and determine what that appropriate unit is for representing employees. Once that is done, we'll conduct an election for those employees to choose their exclusive representative to represent them. If once that happens and there's an exclusive representative in place, things change. We have new employees are hired, job descriptions change, so sometimes there becomes questions about who is in the unit or who isn't in the unit. That's called a unit clarification, and those folks, when they have questions about that, can petition the Bureau for a unit clarification, and we'll kind of walk through that same process, hearing testimony from both parties, applying the statute, and making a determination. All employees, all public employees in the state of Minnesota have the right to independent review, so in situations where employees don't have access to a neutral, disinterested third party by way of policy or a union contract, they can also petition the Bureau for us to hear that. Going on to mediation, as our name suggests, mediation is kind of our core function and where we provide the majority of our services. We provide mediation both for contract disputes and for grievance mediation. And I'm on the contract side in the public sector. As unions, exclusive representatives, for the sake of discussion today, we'll call them unions. As those contracts can become are being renewed and they're working through the process for a successor agreement, if they're unable to reach an agreement on their own, they can contact us and we'll assist them through the mediation process. What comes out of that is a voluntary agreement. So the Bureau does not make decisions in terms of what is acceptable or unacceptable to unions or employers. The decisions that are made in mediation are controlled by the parties. In the state of Minnesota, in the public sector, in order to advance either to a strike or to a implementation of a contract by the employer, or in the case of an essential group, essential members, essential groups are licensed peace officers, firefighters, school principals, correction guards. There's a list in statute that identifies them. They do not have the right to strike, but instead they have the right to interest arbitration, where a neutral third-party arbitrator will make a decision for them regarding their contract. So in order for either of those steps to happen, they need to go through the Bureau of Mediation Service and been in contract mediation. The second type of mediation is grievance mediation. Grievance mediation is when there is a dispute over the interpretation of contract language or a discipline matter. Either party can petition the Bureau for our services, but that is by mutual agreement. That is not required in statute that they come to us for grievance mediation. The process for our mediators is the same in both cases. We meet with the parties and talk about interests and look at options and get the folks to consider things that they maybe haven't considered prior to mediation and really work with the parties to find something that they can live with going forward. A few of the other things that we do are training. One of the things that we focus some of our time on is interest-based collective bargaining. Kind of the easiest way to talk about that is just comparing that to traditional bargaining. We talk about traditional bargaining kind of as a, to use a sports analogy, as a tennis match or ping pong, where the parties are making proposals back and forth across the net until they reach an agreement. In interest-based collective bargaining, we talk about that as you're all in the rowboat and you're rowing together to reach the finish line. So we do some, we provide training for groups, we provide facilitation assistance to them following the training. And that training really focuses on identifying interests together and then reaching solutions that you can live with going forward. The second area that I'd highlight for you is our labor management cooperation. We're actively promoting joint labor management partnerships. The main way that we do that is through worksite labor management committee training. Labor management committees are set up to provide a forum for labor and management between contract negotiations, really, to meet with each other and to work on their relationships and to tackle some of the problems that they, or issues or concerns in the workplace that they can deal with between contracts. The idea of that is to really establish those relationships and rely on those relationships when you get to the bargaining table to negotiate successor agreements. Part of that is we do have a small grant program where we do fund some joint multi-union, multi-employer labor management cooperatives. And then we also provide some additional training on PELRA, which is the Public Employee Labor Relations Act that was passed in 1971. On the back of the brochure, we talk about some of the advantages. You've just heard you talk a little bit about the collaborative approach. That certainly is something that we do at the Bureau of Mediation Services and promote through our labor management cooperatives. And we've got some bullet points on the benefits of doing that. I think now I direct you to the two-sided flyer. We'll look at the side with the bubbles, the circle bubbles on it, and we'll kind of walk through the scope of the BMS connections or impacts to the state of Minnesota. And this is really a diagram of who we serve. And so starting at the top, the state executive branch. In statute, there are 18 units identified in the state executive branch. The University of Minnesota, 13 units also identified in statute. Minnesota State, the state courts, all 87 counties. Cities and towns, about 1,200-ish cities and towns. Special boards, that's transit authorities or library systems, regional library systems, joint powers agreements. K-12 schools, the 325 independent school districts. And there still are some public hospitals and nursing homes that we work with as well. Most of these public employers, particularly counties, cities, and school districts, have multiple contracts with multiple unions. And then using the public pension plan data from FY21, there's about 315 active participants in public employees' pensions. Flipping that brochure over, look, this is just kind of a look at FY22. So as we heard earlier, $2.37 million, all general fund for the Bureau of Mediation Services in FY22. Three-quarters of our budget is on salary and benefits. A quarter of it is on operating expenses. I will point out two things here that are called out separately in our budget. LMC grants, I mentioned that earlier. This LMC being labor management committees. These are labor management committee grants. $68,000 is identified there. And then PERB, we heard earlier that that is the Public Employment Relations Board. A very small percent of our budget, $125,000, that was identified in 2014, 2015. The legislature gave new consideration to PERB and dedicated some funding and some assistance to the Bureau in our budget. But you'll be hearing, I believe, the board chair is next on the agenda, and I'll defer those discussions to that conversation. On the results summary on the right-hand side of this page, at the top, we've got 2,500 requests for service. And then the bullet points below that are just pulling out some of the areas of those requests for service. So 1,400 mediations in FY22, 19 interest-based facilitation cases, some representation elections. One of the things that we do additionally is, I should have mentioned this earlier, we maintain arbitration lists, lists of arbitrators. So if folks are unable to reach an agreement, a mutual agreement that they can live with, and need the service of an arbitrator to make a decision, they can also petition us for that. We pull the names from these lists of arbitrators that we maintain and provide those to the employers and the unions for those services. 434 lists were issued, were requested, and we've published 50 awards. I will point out that the awards are much less than the issues that we, or the list that we issue. There's some reasons for that. It could mean that the party settled on their own. It could mean that the award that we got back is a non-public award. There are lots of awards, discipline cases that end up being non-public awards. And then the second is if in the private sector, not all awards are required to be reported to us. On the performance measures, again, I just pulled out three performance measures. 85% of the labor disputes voluntarily settled, so the 15% that don't, that's either a public sector strike, which we don't have very many of, or the interest arbitration, if they don't settle in the essential world, police officers, firefighters, principals, correction guards, they have the right to interest arbitration. I think I can end it with that. If you have, I appreciate the time, and if there are questions about the agency, I am happy to try and answer those.
Thank you very much for this presentation on the Bureau of Mediation Services. Do any members have any questions? Yes, Senator Gruenhagen.
I will ask this question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your presentation. You know, I had, when I was on the school board, some of you are going to get sick of me saying this, but I was involved with some of these situations, and I noticed you had that circle there. And, you know, I'll just recall one of them. There was some egregious behavior, which just happens, you know what I mean, in the school district. And the person involved, certified staff, even the, we sent the person to remediation numerous times, and really in the end, even the union representative admitted there was a serious problem. And, but yet when we had a closed session, we were told that we had to pay $40,000 out and give the person a clean record to leave the district. And if we took it to you know, arbitration or to legal standing, we would not only pay the $40,000, we would pay additional legal fees, and we'd pay the person additional legal fees. So when you have a school board sitting there tight for money, what do we do? Well, we vote to give the $40,000 for egregious behavior, and everybody agreed it was egregious behavior. I won't go into the details, but basically our legal counsel at the time in the meeting told us that the way the laws are written in this state, that's gonna be the result. So your best option is to pay her $40,000, give her a clean record, and have her leave the district. How do we compare to states around us? You know, I guess is my question. It seems like from, and I, again, I'm a lay person, I've just done a little bit of research. It seems like, and I want to protect employees from discrimination or somebody, you know, wants to go after them. But it just seems like we have overprotective laws in some particular cases when there's very severe egregious behavior. If you would respond to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Donkevich, do you have any response or comments you'd like to add?
Sure, Madam Chair, Senator Gruenhagen, not knowing the specifics of anything that you went through, but I would also say that's not, so those are legal questions for the district and for the unions. Our role as the neutral agency is to work through mediation to try and resolve those before they get to those tough questions. Your question about, you know, how we compare to other states, I don't know the answer to that. That's, you know, again, those are more legal questions and outside of what we do. We don't give legal advice to employers or to unions. We are really focused on the collaborative solution that folks can live with. So they don't have to get there. But I understand your question, and leave it at that. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Dunkavich. Anyone else have any questions or comments? All right. Thank you so much for the presentation. It's really good to know that the Bureau of Mediation Services is out there doing this good work. And thank you very much for the overview and for introducing yourself to the committee. And appreciate it.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much.
Next on our schedule, we have an overview of the Public Employee Relations Board. I'd invite our presenters to come up. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. We're very pleased to have you here. If you could please introduce yourselves, telling us your name and your title and for the record, and then we look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair McEwen, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Meg Luger-Nikolai. I'm the current chair of the Public Employment Relations Board, which I'm going to try to call it that. This is my colleague, Jill Kielblack, who is our executive director. And we are here to talk about what is pretty much the best board you haven't yet heard of, and we're hoping to make it more widely known and more healthily funded. And so I'm going to start a little bit with the history of the creation of the board since we're a relatively new statutory creation. So Minnesota's Public Employment Labor Relations Act, or PELRA, which is an acronym that I probably use more than my own kids' names, provides it all the nuts and bolts for legal organizing of public sector employees in the state of Minnesota. It provides for the creation of bargaining units for public employees, as well as the rules for the road for the parties in employer and union relationships. And for most of its existence, disputes about how PELRA operated were resolved in one of two ways. First, if it was a dispute about the formation of a bargaining unit, those disputes were resolved by the Bureau of Mediation Services, our colleague, Commissioner Dunkavich, in a unit clarification proceeding or a unit certification proceeding or through unfair election practice proceedings. If there was a dispute about whether a party, the union or an employer, had violated the Public Employment Labor Relations Act, that went to district court. So that went to a body that didn't necessarily have expertise in that area, and it was expensive and it's inefficient. And it's unlikely that judges would have the opportunity to develop expertise in this area because there frankly aren't enough of these cases occurring in our 88 counties, and additionally, there frankly aren't, and happily, there aren't a ton of them happening all the time anyway. But in 2014, advocates thought there could be a better way, a way to give public sector labor disputes a specialized forum in a way that's similar to, analogous to, what happens in the private sector. The private sector employees aren't covered by PELRA. They're covered by the National Labor Relations Act. And charges, unfair labor practice charges under that law, go to the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, another administrative agency, and an agency that specializes that. And so there's significant expertise among the judges that consider those cases, as well as the appeals to the board itself. And so what we wanted was for Minnesota to have a system that was similar to that, and in so doing would also replicate the public sector boards that exist in other states. So the legislature created the Public Employment Relations Board and delegated to them the resolution of unfair labor practices. And so what are unfair labor practices? What are, we call them ULPs. And unfair labor practices, those, that list can be found in Chapter 179A, 0.313, subdivision 2. And so examples, this is a non-exhaustive list, would include things like firing somebody for trying to join a union or interfering with the existence of a union, refusing to bargain. So those are things that employers could do to create an allegation that they had violated PELRA. There are unfair labor practices that unions can commit as well. So if they try to coerce somebody into joining a union, or they refuse to negotiate or comply with an arbitration decision, those can be unfair labor practices as well. So if you're sitting there thinking, this is boring, I have a headache, and I don't know what anything these things mean, that is because I deal with them every single day. Most people do not deal with them on a daily basis. And so it's a niche practice for us, it's a niche practice for advocates, and that's why it's so helpful to have this specialized forum. Our board is a 6-member board. There is a neutral, there is a union representative and a management representative, and then there's an alternate for each of those three categories. The legislation that created the board, the PERB, was adopted in 2014, and it had two noteworthy aspects. First, there was a ramp-up period. So there was from July 1st, 2014 to June 30th, 2015, we were to stand ourselves up with the help of the commissioner of the Bureau of Mediation Services. The other noteworthy aspect from our perspective, and my perspective all the time, was that we received a budget allocation that was modest, like Victorian, modest, like it would have been, you know, even in the 1880s, not a very lot of money. So our allocation was $125,000. And I think, without speaking for everybody, but actually speaking for everybody, we all thought this was a startup budget. And at the time, Commissioner Tilson, God rest his soul, pulled together advocates for employers and unions as well as neutrals and tried to put together a steering committee that created an initial draft of rules to make it easier to jumpstart the rulemaking process. We didn't have that authority, but we wanted to help. And they lent staff to us in order to try to create some standard operating procedures and really do everything to make this as efficient as possible. Unfortunately, when we hit 2015, the legislature did not increase the PERB budget beyond the $125,000. So if you look at the legislative history of the statute on the reviser's website, you're going to see a series of notes in which our jurisdiction has been pushed out year by year until 2020, when legislators could not come to an agreement on either funding or implementation dates. And so we went into an effect with our existing allocation. And so we opened our doors to start taking charges on July 1st, 2020. So the good news was that we were in the second year of our biennial budget, and we were able to operate with our allocation for that year and the reserves for the year before. But that still only left us with a tiny little budget. And so we don't have right now the capacity to hire full-time permanent staff because Minnesota management and budget won't let us hire people if we can't pay them, which I think is probably a relief to Commissioner Blissenbach and everybody in this room. But we have been so fortunate, so blessed to be able to hire Ms. Kielblack, who is she's 0.3, but she's our 0.3 executive director. She has no administrative support. She's just our chief cook and bottle washer. And we, again, are so grateful, but want to do better. During the year in which our doors were open, we processed 31 cases, and those required varying levels of action on the part of ourselves and on the part of Ms. Kielblack. The statute itself requires a prompt investigation of any charge filed. That required us to review charges and evidentiary submissions and for an initial determination as to whether the charge had, in the language of the statute, a reasonable basis in law and fact. And if it did, then we needed to create and issue a complaint, and that got going a hearing process. And once the hearing process got going, we needed to hire a hearing officer. That individual conducts a hearing, writes an award, all of that we have to pay for. So this is sort of a, if you give a mouse a cookie kind of form of operating right now, we want to do well, but that requires resources. So our jurisdiction did end again on June 30th, 2021. There was an agreement to put us on ice or in stasis, I think I've said a few times. And during that window, folks have to return to court. So a process that was really meant to, in some ways, relieve a burden on our court system and also create a specialized forum was, again, put in abeyance and really leaves workers and employers without a more efficient way to do business. So in the coming weeks, this committee will be hearing a bill to increase our funding. We badly need this so that we can hire staff, pay contractors, meet our basic operating requirements. And I know you're going to hear this from pretty much everybody, but when I say it, I mean it very specially about us. It would be great if we could know as early as possible that the funding's going to be there, because then it will enable us to begin our hiring process so that we can have folks actually ready to roll when our doors open again on July 1st, which we are definitely looking forward to happening. We see ourselves as complementary to the work of the Bureau. We see ourselves as providing a service not only to employers, but to unions, to workers, and to every taxpayer in the state of Minnesota, because our job is really to help try to resolve these things in the most cost-effective but knowledgeable way possible. And we were proud of the work that we did while we were open. We'd love to keep that rolling, and we'd love to have your help in doing so. If there are specific questions about the data, Jill has some of that at her fingertips too.
Thank you very much for this presentation. And I just wanted to offer, we do have a few minutes if there were any comments. Is it Ms. Kielblock, Jill Kielblock? If you had anything that you wanted to add to before we take any questions.
No, just we do our best to be, we did our best to try and be timely in processing things. But like Nicole said, with me working a maximum of 12 hours a week, much of that fell onto the board members themselves, all of whom have full-time jobs that they need to work on too. So we really, if we're going to have the authority to accept unfair labor practice charges again, we really need to ramp up and have the staff to be able to carry out that mission efficiently and effectively. We did process 31 cases, issued complaints in 10 of those cases. Only three of them actually went to hearing. The others were resolved before their hearing dates. The other 21 cases were either withdrawn or dismissed by the board, withdrawn by the charging party or dismissed by the board. But it probably took us a lot longer than we would have hoped it would have done to do that.
Thank you very much. Members, Senator Pappas.
Well, I think there's someone on this committee that actually was the author of that bill. And I want to apologize that I wasn't able to get you more dollars or in the following years to be able to fund the PERB, or should I say the Public Employee Relations Board? because I think it is really important, the work that you do. And I think the more we can kind of avoid the really expensive costs of going to court and resolve these issues that, similar to what the Bureau of Mediation Services did, the more important that is and the more cost-effective it is for all involved. So I hope that this committee will have a sufficient budget to be able to fund you at the level so you can really do the work that you should be doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Are there any other questions or comments from our members? Okay. Thank you again for coming and joining us today and for your presentation. We look forward to working with you this session. All right, and for the last part of our agenda, we have a presentation about the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. We appreciate you joining us so much. And if you would please state your name and your title, and then we look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is, can you hear me? My name's Patty Millen. I am the Chief Judge of the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. Thank you for inviting me here today to talk a little bit about the role of the WCCA in the workers' compensation system, what we do, who we are, the challenges presented, and the appropriations I will be seeking this session. The Department of Labor and Industry, the Commissioner, did a great job explaining in detail that agency, and I would just like to state that the Department oversees Minnesota workers' compensation programs. They operate the Special Compensation Fund, which for all practical purposes is an insurance company. They have specialists and rehabs and mediation. And they are part of an essential beginning of the workers' compensation system. So you have the Department of Labor and Industry, and forgive me if I slip into acronyms. And then you have the Office of Administrative Hearings, the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, and both Office of Administrative Hearings and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals are quasi-judicial agencies that are under the executive branch. And then finally, we have the Minnesota Supreme Court.
So the Department of Labor and Industry launched a data management system, and I had to write it down because I call it CAMPUS. It's Claims Access and Management Platform User System. And they did this to replace their existing IT infrastructure. Because records handled and developed by this court are maintained by the department, this court has been involved in the planning and implementation of that project. We have been working shoulder to shoulder to make sure that our system and our court is part of the statutory mandate that was implemented during the pandemic. So many of these disputes that move through the Department of Labor and Industry settle. But there are those disputes that require a formal hearing. And those disputes move from the Department of Labor and Industry to the Office of Administrative Hearings for fact-finding and decisions. Compensation judges at the Office of Administrative Hearings preside over those hearings and then make factual determinations and issue a decision. The Office of Administrative Hearings maintains a separate IT infrastructure. It's called CTRAC. That is not an acronym. It is through Thomson Reuters. And the hearing record that we receive comes from CTRAC. So when the parties at Office of Administrative Hearings are unsatisfied with the decision, then an appeal may be taken to the WCCA. I just made an acronym of my own court, I'm sorry. Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, which has statewide jurisdiction to review all decisions from the Department of Labor and Industry, the Office of Administrative Hearings, and the Union Workers' Compensation Arbitration. The Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals also has original jurisdiction to hear petitions to vacate awards and settlement agreements. And then appeals from our decisions go directly to the judicial branch, which is the Minnesota Supreme Court. And I have written this down because it's going to be go into a technology that I'm probably not as good at for some of the techie pieces. But like many agencies and courts, effective operations management during the pandemic was an incredible challenge. During this time, the WCCA's digital transformation as part of a uniform data management system that integrates the e-filing technologies with my court was required to integrate its operations with CTRAC at the Office of Administrative Hearings, as well as comply with the statutory requirements to use CAMPUS, Claims Access and Management Platform User System, at the Department of Labor and Industry. Currently, the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals has an operation budget of $2,283,000 per year. The Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals is entirely funded by the Special Compensation Fund. We have no general or revolving fund. So I will be seeking a $200,000 base appropriation and a one-time appropriation of $100,000 for rulemaking. And the rulemaking here is really important. The Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals procedural rules, which have been in place for decades, are in need of updating to eliminate the confusion among the stakeholders and incorporate the statutory requirements of electronic filing. And I would like to say this in conclusion. With the pandemic and technology, I have seen firsthand how unrepresented people, specifically injured workers, are getting pushed behind. And one of my goals is to make sure that we continue to have transparency and an equal playing field to bring forth the rights of all through the system. DALI has an ombudsman program. I have been grateful on many occasions for their application of the law and the tools to help people and make sure that justice is given for all. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much, Chief Judge Millen. We really appreciate this overview, and thank you for explaining the acronyms. I just want to make it clear, I don't object to the acronyms after we're all on board, but I want to make sure people actually understand what we're talking about. So thank you very much. I know that they're in common usage for people as terms of art. Are there any questions for Chief Judge Millen? Thank you very much, Chief Judge, for this presentation.
All, and I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you again this session.
Likewise. Thank you. All right. Well, colleagues, we have reached the end of our agenda today, and we are a little bit early, which is a delight for me. And I will give us back a half hour of our afternoon time. I know that we are all quite busy at this time with the beginning of the session starting up, and we're off to the races. So unless there are any objections, I will go ahead and adjourn. Are there any objections to going ahead to adjourn? Okay. Yes. Yes, Senator Gruenhagen. You could always bring those questions, Senator Gruenhagen. All right. Thank you very much, colleagues. The Senate Labor Committee is adjourned.